Hello, Lauren Jean here, PhD student of mind-body medicine, hypnotist and inner voice facilitator. This is my podcast. Let's get right into it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. This episode is a fun one. Me and my friend Lindsay talk everything about conscious parenting. We talk about from how to speak to your kids, programming their subconscious mind when they are very young, being the observer of your thoughts and also giving this tool to your children, detaching from controlling your kids' decisions, and then also offering options. We also talk a little about human design, among some other things. So I'm not going to go too much into anything else. I just want you to enjoy the episode. And again, please reach out if you need to at laurenjeanwellandhip@gmail.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Spotify. And also, I would love a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much. Enjoy the show.
You had a baby about, what, a little over a month ago?
Yeah, like 5 weeks.
5 weeks. She's 5 weeks, and she is just so cute sitting there in your lap. So if you hear little baby noises, we've got a live infant on the call.
That's right.
She's little getting Miss Harper. Yeah, she's so precious. So you have this new little one, and you've learned so much over the past, what, 3.5 years, 3-ish years, something like that?
Yeah, that's about right. Because I want to say that Corbin was almost 4 or so when I really started deep diving into this stuff. And he's almost 7.
Okay. So yeah, the time has flown by. But I want to get into this topic of parenting, because that's also something that I love to talk about, because I have such an amazing relationship with my daughter, and I want to share a bit about that here today too. But I want to see what has changed with the way you parent, whether it be with Corbin or what you're doing with Harper, or even what you're doing with your husband, because, you know, he is a part of this parenting thing. It's you guys do it as a couple, and me and my ex do it very well together. So there's big differences here. But tell me, like, if you can remember back, like, what is one of the first things that kind of like popped into your head and you wanted to explore when we first started talking?
So for me, like, the memory that stands out the most is I was in your group and we were going over like the subconscious and how the subconscious works. And so I think the first thing that like drew me in and basically like felt like a lightning bolt striking me was the realization that we are writing our kids' subconscious program, because it's developed from the time they're 0 to 7. So at that point I was like, I got to get my fucking shit together, because my kid is 4 and I've had 4 years of what we were calling conscious parenting, like parenting, you know, from just like going through the motions, versus like unconscious parenting, where we're actually like grooming the subconscious program for them, like setting them up for success. And so I kind of had a feeling of terror, because I was like, dear God, I've probably fucked up my kid beyond measure. And you were like, it's okay. Like, everything can be rewritten. You know, like, all that matters is that you discovered it, and like, now you're working on it, and it's going to be great. And so like, from that moment, like, he ended up being my reason for like super diving into everything, like really trying to understand it. So I'm like, so my kid has a fighting chance of not sitting in a therapy chair for 30 years, you know what I mean? And so I started taking it seriously. And so I started with, once I first started understanding like that your brain doesn't understand negative words, like no and not, was like one of the first things that we started implementing. And it's funny, because my husband is like, we're definitely like the yin to the yang. Like, I've got my head in the clouds and he has his feet on the ground. And if it was up to me, like, I would just be like, oh, la-ti-da, like everything whimsical and like all this stuff. And he's like Mr. Realist, which you can attest to. I'm like the dreamer, and he's a dreamer too, but he's a realistic dreamer. So, but anyway, when I first started explaining all of this to him, like he was super receptive because his main goal is to like raise a happy, healthy kid, and like family is his biggest priority. And so we kind of started there with the whole, like, we're going to tell him what we do want and not tell him what we don't want. And most importantly, focusing on like the words that we pour into him and like feed into him, and being very mindful to not put in, not use. And this isn't to anyone who listens to this. This is not to shame anything that you have done prior to even being aware of this knowledge, because that's a whole phase of like kind of going through every single thing you've ever done and feeling like we all have the parenting guilt no matter what we do. And so I went through it, and it was like, but being mindful of like not like even out of fun or play, because your brain doesn't understand if you're joking or not. And like, this is a whole nother thing when we're talking about the way we speak to ourselves, but not even like playfully like name calling or like the whole lazy thing. Like you don't want to say you're not lazy because your kid hears you're lazy. So being mindful of things like that, and not even like making jokes like, oh, here you go, fatty, or like, you know, when they're hungry or stuff like that, because, you know, I've witnessed it in, you know, in kids where, you know, their parents were playful and now they have this like body dysmorphia or whatever. But being mindful of, so that was like our first step, was like really articulating our words that we speak to him and being mindful of, you know, not calling him anything, even if it's in play. And like, even, you know, when we're angry or whatever, not, you know, about him being lazy, not, you know, like really kind of perfecting the way we word it so that we're not setting him up to fail with a bad program.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you said so much in there. And did you feel like it was, no, that was fine. I like the detail. Did you find that it was hard to break out of those types of patterns and just really paying attention to what you say? Like, was that a hard thing, or was it also very helpful for you know, for yourself?
It's easier when you're doing it for someone else. Like anyone who's a parent knows, like, you know, you'll go hungry for your kid versus if you go on a diet for yourself to lose weight, you're still sneaking M&Ms. You know what I mean? But like when it's for your kid, it's, I was just like, this is do or die. We have to do this right. We have to be mindful. We had a million conversations about it. And like, basically every time something comes up, like, you know, even in the moment, if we're, you know, if I'm saying something or he's saying something, we will look at each other and be like, don't use that word, you know, and we both know that like, it's because of the way that it's going to program his subconscious or whatever. And so it was more than anything, I was vigilant about like observing the words and like really analyzing everything that I was saying and like really kind of rehearsing thoughts and stuff before I would say stuff. And there was a time of like practice, you know, where I would like practice saying stuff and then catch stuff. And so it was easy for him. I mean, for me personally, that took a lot more work because this subconscious has been running for over 30 years. But when I found it to be very easy because it was for him.
Yeah, I find it easier to do things outside of us rather than for us. Absolutely. Because you're thinking of someone else's well-being and not so much of your own. Like it's easy for, I still do it sometimes where I think about feeding her, and because we have very different like schedules in eating. We don't follow the typical, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner. We eat and we're hungry. So sometimes I'm hungry, but I sometimes suppress that not knowing it because I'm so focused on her. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh shit, I'm hungry too. What am I doing? You know, like that all the time. Things like that all the time. So I'm always constantly reminding myself, but yeah, it's so much easier to take your focus off of yourself to then help someone else first, especially when they're your child. That's definitely something to always be worked on, I think, but also taking your focus off of yourself can also help to really help grow yourself. So you're not always thinking me, what's wrong, and then, you know, your ego starts going crazy, and then it's overthinking, and then it's anxiety, and it's all this stuff. So sometimes taking your focus off of yourself is also very beneficial as well.
I think that it helped me too, because I was practicing everything with him. So then as I was like really trying to like do this whole mindful parenting, it was spilling over into me. I mean, obviously initially, you know, when I started like consuming your content and stuff, I'm of course thinking about myself, like I'm interested in this, you know, I'm very like scientific. I love the way the brain works. And so like everything that you were saying was like, just like feeding my soul, you know, but I initially got in it for me, but then I like realized how much was going to benefit my kid. But then as I would learn to dissect all these phrases and like to be so mindful and careful, which, you know, I felt like at the time I was a very reactive parent. I was overwhelmed, overstimulated. I was running an online business and I was working myself into the ground. The whole thing was just like chasing. Like, I'm pretty sure I stayed in fight or flight from the time he was born until I learned how to meditate, seriously. And so it took a lot of unlearning and a lot of patience for me to like, you have to just start with observing. So I started with observing and was like, okay, I need to rewrite that. But then as I learned to be more patient with him, then I'm starting to learn like, okay, I need to like be more patient with myself, observe my thoughts. And I started looking at it from more of an analytical, like just observing and dissecting, not judging. And it was so easy to take that and then integrate it into, you know, my life and like, you know, teach other people how to do it for themselves too.
Yeah, which is incredible. I always tell people, be the observer, right? Where I heard that a couple of places actually, through Michael Singer and Eckhart Tolle, who I'm obsessed with, especially lately. But yeah, being the observer of your thoughts and separating from your thoughts so you can just observe what's happening in these thoughts.
It muted us for 1 second. So be the observer for your thoughts.
Be the observer of your thoughts so that you can separate from them and you can actually see what's going on. Because if you cling to them, then you're going to create this, you know, roller coaster of emotions that are not necessary. And that's creating more resistance and just more frustration and more all of these, you know, what we call negative emotions. So observing them has been my number one tool that I've done with myself and with my clients and coworkers and everyone around me. It's just observe what's happening and don't call it anything. It's just kind of there. Like learning to not be reactive towards them is a practice that I do every day.
And I feel like you can't create change. Like if you're observing and you immediately start judging yourself, you cannot create change from that space. Like you can't create change from a triggered fight or flight state. You have to be in a neutral state or in a joyful state for you to create that change.
Yes. You know? Yeah, exactly. And like, these are big things that we can teach our kids, right? Yeah. They might think that we're a little crazy at some times, but I've shared this with my daughter. I've noticed that she has calmed down a lot, especially with the anxiety she was experiencing last year in eighth grade. She doesn't have that anymore. She's gotten to a point where she's just like, I don't care. She's dropped a lot of anxiety. She doesn't have that social anxiety anymore. And she just is who she is now and growing into it just by using that one tool. And it's incredible.
Well, I think also like you teaching her stuff about like the foods that she eats and the way that they make her body feel. And also like the amount of exercise that she's been getting because she loves to go to the gym with you is like, you know, second and third in line with like making that change. It's amazing.
Well, you know, it's funny that you just mentioned that because she fell into another pattern, which, you know, we all do, but I have learned, and this is something that's been tough for me in the teenage years specifically, is now she is this, you know, normal sized person with, you know, her own thoughts, her own patterns. And you can tell your kid and you can kind of, in a way, control them. I don't like to use that word, but I don't know what else to put in this place. But you can control them when they're like, you know, middle school and younger. But when they become a high schooler, it's very different. I've learned to step back, these are things that I've improved on, and I've seen her improvement as well. So I've learned to detach from that resistance. And this is just really within the last month or so, I've really been working on this and noticing it, but allowing her to make certain decisions, not being on top of her about certain things. Like, let's just say, for example, diet, right? Because I noticed that she's kind of gone downhill, and I've noticed her moods have changed. And just recently, we took her to see a neurologist because she was having some issues with tics that she's had her whole life. And she came back from that. She tried a medication. Again, I was not for it. Her dad was not for it. But we were both on board with allowing her to try it. So we did. And it knocked her out for 24 hours. She was out like a light. She got scared. So did me and him and everyone else in the house, because we didn't know what was going on. We've never had experience with any type of medication, but she woke up, she was excited, and she's like, I don't ever want to do that again. So we got rid of the medicine, and she made a decision on her own. This wasn't even me. She said, I want to eat healthier. I want to have salads. I want to go back to the gym. I want to be healthy. I want to feel good. So to not put this in her head or step forward and say, you're doing this, this is what you need to do, I just kind of, I let go. And she came back to this realization that I need to take control of my life, and I need to direct it rather than taking a medication or listening to everyone around me. Like, she's developing her confidence even more. She made herself a salad last night for dinner, and then she made extra for lunch today. She took a salad to lunch. We went shopping after the dentist yesterday, and she was on this, you know, healthy food kick. So she bought a bunch, we bought a bunch of snacks, and she's like, I am proud of myself. She had this proud feeling of herself, and I felt proud that she was able to get to that on her own. Now, not saying she's not going to fall back again, because we all do, but yeah, this is part of life. Like, this is, mm-hmm, this is part of life. There's nothing perfect. I don't expect her to be like this forever, right? This is just a constant reminder that I need, mm-hmm, to do this. I need to do this. I need to do, and this is how we learn, right? Repetition. So that was a powerful thing for me to experience as a parent with a moody, almost 15-year-old, is stepping back and letting her be a person, not a child. So that was really big. And now all I can do as her mom is support her. And she's still a kid, so I still need to, you know, give her a nudge every once in a while, but I'm not telling her what she should do, right? It's more about suggesting things or bringing things to her attention, and just constantly supplying her with the, you know, the right nutrition and, hey, let's go to the gym kind of thing and get outside and get some activity. Because a big thing she was doing when she was in this, I'll call it funk, not a depression, but it was a funk, is she would come home from school and she would be tired because of her attitude, because of her, you know, because of everything that's happening, and just being a hormonal teenager, she would want to go and take a nap. She'd nap for a couple of hours, wake up, and then her sleep schedule would be off. And she would wonder why she couldn't have energy, right? I hear this all the time. I'm tired. I'm tired. It drives me crazy to hear young people say, I'm tired. Something's up there. So yeah, my whole point is I'm learning to step back and notice what she's noticing in her, and letting, mm-hmm, myself be okay and realize that this is part of how she's going to learn and grow. I can't be on top of her all the, mm-hmm, time. I can't tell her what to do, because, you know, if you listen back to, you know, what your parents used to say, did you listen to them all the time? As a teenager, no, you don't want to be told what to do. No one does.
You got
to
make it where it's their idea. So you drop hints, and then they come up with ideas themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the supporting role, right? As a parent.
So this makes me think of two things, and I'm at a fork in the road, because I want to talk about both of these topics. And so you can tell me which direction you want to go with this. Like, you speaking about her being tired immediately makes me want to talk about human design and energy. But I also, just don't let me forget that you know, we always say life is an experiment. And it reminds me of like the second leg of what I like went into on this whole like unconscious parenting journey, which was like the inner child healing that we do with our kids that we needed as kids, and like all the revelations that I had. So
yeah, there's so many ways to go about that. So many ways. What are you feeling more pulled towards? Like, don't think about it. Just go. Just start talking.
Yeah, I want to talk about the life as an experiment stuff, because I think it goes right in line with our whole observation, because that is like the biggest part of it, is like one of the best ways to become detached from, you know, the ways that we want to parent our children, you know, that society makes us feel like we have to, or that things that are ingrained in us from our upbringing. Like, for example, I grew up in South Louisiana. I lived there for the first 25 years of my life. And then I moved to Texas, which is just another version with a lot of, you know, brisket and everything's bigger in Texas, you know. But, you know, I grew up in this culture where everything is all about like tough love. And I just feel like it was like culturally acceptable to basically like talk shit to your kid in a fun way, almost as like an exhibit of your, I don't know, sense of humor or a way to adapt to whatever. And I feel like it's like one of those generational things that you grow up seeing it, and so you think that that's how you should parent. And I remember, you know, whenever I first got pregnant with Corbin, like if you've listened to any part of this podcast, like you already know, like I do speak like a sailor. It's just part of what I do. And I have gotten better since I have kids, but you know, I just like always pictured this whole, like, I'm going to be a cool parent, you know? But then once I learned all this unconscious, like this subconscious work, I started to realize how critically important it is. And not to like sound like I've just gone 100% soft, you know, and that I just let everything slide and coddle my kid, but like to really understand how our kids like process things, and like how important it is to like show them that we care and to be gentle and kind, and not to just like, you know, tell them to brush the dust off. Like, yeah, there has to be a level of like, you know, they experiment and they learn from their own mistakes, et cetera. But it completely shifted the way that I intended to parent, honestly, because I think I hadn't even thought about all of that stuff. I just was going through like, oh, well, I'm just going to do what I know. And, you know, besides reading about like their development and like the food and like taking care of all of these things, that just wasn't even something that I ever thought about. And then once I learned this information, it just completely shifted everything. But the biggest part of me like getting out of my head when it came to like being a reactive parent and just, you know, being irritable or flying off the handle or like getting overwhelmed or getting overstimulated or like, you know, ensuring that I don't like yell at my kid or like, you know, just throwing my hands up and, you know, whatever, was like this whole life is an experiment thing. Like I had to step away and be like, okay, like just like you're trying stuff with Christy, like I need to try this and observe how it goes, and like really observing like what my kid was more receptive to and, you know, what ways worked for certain things and trying new things, but then also letting him experiment and not like try to control him so much, because I am a recovering control freak, like real bad.
Yeah. So, and right. It's like, it's okay if something doesn't go your way, because it's not your way. It's their way. Okay with that.
Do you remember? And I remember it like it was yesterday, because I feel like this was a huge breakthrough in my next leg or the second phase of my whole subconscious work, not even realizing that I was doing my own inner child healing here. But I remember I sent you a voice clip and I was telling you like, oh my gosh, like I get it now. Like I'm over here doing this like delayed gratification thing. So like when Corbin was, I mean, 4 or whatever, he wasn't in school yet and he wasn't going to mom's day out because COVID, And we were home and I was running my t-shirt business, and my t-shirt business, like in my, like, I call it my craft room. It's like a lady cave or whatever, like separate from the house. And he would come in and, like, you know, just want to have fun, be joy-free, you know, just not joy-free, carefree, joyous, and just like play and like whatever. And I'm like, I got to get this done. Panic, you know, all this stuff. And it hit me because he would ask me to do something. I'd be like, not yet. And I realized, I'm like, why am I delaying his fun? Like, why does he have to wait? Why do I, like, and also realizing that as soon as I actually let him do the fun thing, then he'll be content and I can go back to doing whatever it was that I was doing. But it was like, I had this like delayed gratification built into me that it was like, no, we all have to suffer before we can have fun. And so when I realized that, it was like, whoa, I need to heal that in myself, but I don't need to put that on my kid. Like, everyone can be happier. He can get what he wants. I can get what I want. And like stepping back from it and noticing the pattern.
Yeah.
Which is part of experimenting, like being in an experiment. Like, we're looking to observe these patterns, these thoughts, these clues that help us rework the problem another way.
Mm-hmm. And that's huge, especially when you realize it, because then it almost makes it easier to break the pattern. And for me, at least, those things became like a fun little game or a challenge. And I love a good challenge. I think a lot of people like a good challenge, right? Things are boring and they're boring and you don't think about them. But when they're apparent to you, it can be more fun. And then when you accomplish it, it feels good, right? Because we're all like children deep down inside. We like challenges. We like to feel accomplished. We like to be noticed. That doesn't ever go away. So yeah. And I do remember you sending me that. There were so many voice recordings, but I do remember you sending that one. That was way back.
I mean, I felt like that was one of my biggest breakthroughs. And it's funny because once you have that breakthrough and you're like giving yourself the chance to observe this stuff, you basically have established a parenting hack or a life hack for yourself. And like you said, like when it's that big of an impact, it's easier to just like, okay, well, this is the way we're doing this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The breakthrough breaks the pattern.
And then you create a new pattern, a new healthier pattern for everyone. And then you show your kid that that's okay. You show them that it's okay. Because by him hearing not yet, that's the things that are creating these negative patterns in him.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's not going to allow him to move forward.
And that's the biggest thing, is like, my biggest fear was like, what have I done so far that I had no idea? But it's like, everything can be rewritten. Everything can be corrected. It's not all from 0 to 7. You know, we all have these traumatic events or these impactful events that become part of our subconscious, and everything can be rewritten. And so that was a huge part of like giving myself some grace. I'm like, it doesn't matter, because you're putting in the work now and everything can be rewritten.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And even in that 0 to 7, remember, that's just when your brainwaves are moving slower, because you're still so young. You're like that little supercomputer. So yeah, you're still creating and you're writing stories, but 0 to 7 is when it is the most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The most powerful.
Yeah. And so, you know, just focusing on like, you can do anything, and reinforcing like, you are so smart and, you know, you're so capable, and wow, you're so creative, and like, things like that, that build them up, that you like, I mean, if you could make a list of things you wish you heard as a kid, like jot them down and say them on a loop to your kid so you can heal.
Definitely.
That trauma, you know?
Absolutely. Oh, let me share one quick thing about, you know, childhood. So I'm taking this energy class right now. I mean, this is week 4, just finished. And the instructor, his name is Tyler Odysseus, and he's an energy worker. And he shared a story about his childhood. And this is so apparent on why he's an energy worker, healer, and teacher now, is because he said as a young kid, he was able to see, I can't remember, it was some type of like imaginary, well, it's not an imaginary bird, it's like an old time bird, something that's like really not around anymore, like in prehistoric times. But as a kid, he was able to see this in a certain tree, like a certain type of tree where he lived. Mm-hmm. And the bird was right there in an energetic field, but it wasn't something that like his mother could see, but she would always congratulate him and say, that's great, Tyler, like this is great. And he says to this day, he still sees that in that same tree. And it's because his brain was allowed by his mother to see this. And his mother wasn't saying, oh, you're crazy, that's not there, what are you seeing? Didn't send him to anyone, but he was allowed to see this. He was encouraged to see it as a child. And now look where he's ended up. And that's just incredible. And because as parents, we tend to, you know, discourage or tell our kids, oh, you can't see that, you can't do this, you can't do that. Then your brain learns from a young age that, oh, that's not possible. Or I don't want to get attention for this. I don't want to get negative attention for this. But if you're allowed to do certain things, if your child wants to be, say, president or an astronaut, and you don't believe that it's possible, only certain people can get it. If you tell them, you know, that's really hard, or you're not gonna be able to do that, or you're not gonna be able to make money from that, then the child is gonna believe that. And it's not gonna be something that they're going to aspire towards. They're not gonna think that it's possible for them. And not to, you know, put down our parents or anyone for that, but that's how your brain learns. Like, it was okay for him to see that. Now he can see so many other things, and that is his brain's allowing him to still see that as an adult. I think that's a pretty powerful message for any parent to hear. Like, if your child sees something like an imaginary friend, encourage that. That's their creativity, that's their imagination growing, and it's incredible. It really is incredible. That's powerful for a kid to take that into their entire life and create future from it.
Yeah. And so many, it's crazy because, you know, your imagination is connected to your intuition, but like when you hear his story, like almost every energy worker or like people who are like discovering that they're psychic or can, you know, see spirits or whatever, it's like, they all have a story about how their whole family thought that they were crazy. Or like one of my friends, like, can see all this stuff, and she grew up in the church, and basically her mom made her think she's a devil or evil because she was seeing, you know what I mean? So it's like so amazing that he had that experience. And that is just, it's all, and this is what I was going to say. I was trying to recall the thing that I was trying to hold on to and not forget while you were saying that, when you were saying like no fault on the parents. And one of the biggest things that is when you're going through this process and you're trying to do this gentle parenting and you're trying, or whatever you want to call it. I call it a million things. One of the hardest things is, you know, we go through and we criticize ourselves for anything that we've done wrong to our kids. But then we immediately recall our childhood and we think, where did I get that from? And it's easy if you're not in a place of like legitimately trying to heal this and whatever it is, to find fault and to blame. And one of the things that I always like to say to myself and to everyone is your parents didn't know what they didn't know. And, you know, they didn't realize that they were carrying generational trauma that they were passing down to you. And I also like to remind people that like, they didn't have access to the information that we have. Like, did my mom have an opportunity to be in Lauren Jean's Facebook group? No, she did not. And, you know, did she have access to Pinterest and all these articles, and could they just Google stuff? You know, like, they didn't have access. And so, you know, we don't want to point blame. You just kind of have to have the mindset of, well, it ends with me. And we don't want to hold grudges for the things that they've done. Like, if we just carry that hate or anger around with us, we're not really healing it.
Exactly.
And part of this process, when you're doing these things with your kid, you're not just instilling this great thing in your kid, you're healing your own inner child and your own generational trauma, or however you want to look at it. So it benefits your kid, but it benefits you because you don't have to carry that burden anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, when you change those things in yourself, it helps change everyone around you. So you're not just doing it for yourself. You know, you can change the way, if you're close to your parents, like I am super close to my parents. Ever since I've started changing things about myself, I've noticed a whole shift in their type of energy. It's a big ripple effect, you know, from parents to your friends. People just want to know what you're doing. and how they can do that too. Because we all just want to feel good.
And when you do it with love and not from a place of blame, people are way more receptive. Like my mom is like, tell me all about it. Like I'm all ears, you know, because there's never a conversation where I'm blaming her for anything that she did. You know, like people don't want to feel attacked. You know, they want to understand it from a point of view, but not everyone will be open and receptive, but we can't force them. We can just meet them where they are and, you know, hold our own space. And I mean, that kind of brings me to my mind about the whole energy thing. If you want to take it there,
go for it.
So when you were talking about Christy being tired, I immediately started thinking about, and I've told you this story. I started thinking about her human design and, you know, what she has open and what she has closed. But I know I've told you this story and I want to say it because it's so good. But about a year ago, I went to a military air show. Do you remember this story?
Yes.
And when I went to that military air show, at first, when we got there, we were like, this is amazing. Like all these planes are so awesome, taking pictures with a million things, you know, then it got crowded, then it got hot. And by the end of the day, we were all like, I'm ready to go, you know, and I've been that way my whole life. Like when I go into these really crowded places, at first, I'm really excited. And then by the end of it, I'm like completely drained. And on the way home, I was so irritable that I literally told my husband not to speak to me. I was like, felt like my body was going to jump out of my skin. And I came home and like did my own thing to like ground my energy. But what a lot of people don't think about, or what I had never thought about before I had this realization and had that experience and the opposite experience, is that when you're in an area with people, you are connected to their energy. And like when we went to that air show, like when you think about the military, there is all of these mixed emotions. Like there's pride, but there's mourning, there's grief, there's anger. I mean, there's people who are angry with the state of our country, you know, all these things. So there's all these, like, in my opinion, probably more tumultuous emotions than pure joy. And then, you know, you take the opposite. Like I remember going to a concert and I came home and I was just like, wow. Like I understand now why people just go to concerts all the time, because when you're in this one huge arena with all these people that experience all this joy for this one person and their music has improved their life and vice versa, it's like you are getting energetically charged. Like I wish I could bottle that up. Remember we talked about you trying to bottle it up when you went to that concert?
Yeah.
But it's true. And so like, you know, there's this whole aspect of like, energetically, like you said, when you're starting making these shifts, it is going to touch and reach the people in your family, in your life, and vice versa. But we also have to remember sometimes that we're also going to take on other people's energy. And so, you know, we want to be mindful of, you know, what kind of environments drain us and what kind of environments charge us, and learn when we need to recharge. And a lot of that can be found in your human design and learning your kids' human design, which has helped me a ton with my parenting. But knowing, you know, if you are susceptible to other people's energy. And I just was thinking about Christy, like she's in middle
school. Ninth grade.
I thought she was in high school, but then you said eighth grade earlier. Okay. Yeah. It's like you're in high school. Like think about just the sheer amount of hormones up in that beast.
You know what I mean?
Like you're taking on that energy. Like, so you're her having the exercise and spending time outside and stuff is a way for her to discharge other people's energy and like get back to ground zero for her. Or the word that I've been using so much in the past month is just like homeostasis, like your version of balance in your body.
Yeah, absolutely. And when she's outside, she is this ball of energy. She doesn't want to come back in. And definitely school definitely drains her, because she's not the type of kid to be hanging out with like a group of friends. Like she is a one-on-one type of kid. She likes to do her own thing. She's kind of like me. She's not interested in school sports, anything like that. She likes one-on-one things where she's done like ice skating before. She's done singing lessons. It's always been things that are solo. And she's even did baton twirling, which was with a group, but she was with her friends, everyone that she knew, everyone that was, you know, in her eyes, accepting of her and no one that would be, you know, putting her down or questioning her. Like, she didn't have any thoughts like that. But most school sports are, you know, generally not like that. But that was also when she was in like fifth, sixth, seventh grade. So yeah, when she is in a group like classes, and plus she's not really enjoying it anyway. Yeah, her energy is just like sucked from her. Really is. And I see it. And then sometimes I have to like push her outside or tell her to get outside or open the windows and just be in the light. And she's realizing that. Again, it comes back to not controlling it, but just making her aware and, you know, opening your eyes, like what makes you feel good? What makes you feel good? That kind of thing. Be outside.
It really makes me want to teach our kids and everyone, honestly, that like the way that you charge your phone to the charger, like putting your bare feet on the ground, that is your human battery charger, because you can discharge any kind of excess energy that is not yours. Like, that's how you release trauma. That's how you heal your body. That's how you reduce inflammation. That's how you get back to ground zero.
Yeah.
At least 30 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
So. But then you also have like, and I'm not even really that far into astrology, but like I was looking at all of our signs the other day, and like Corbin is a water sign. I'm a sun sign. Kurt is a sun sign or fire. And Harper is Aries too. So she's a fire sign. And I was just thinking about like, for me, I always have these memories of like a place that is like my moment of bliss. Like if I ever want to imagine one of my most blissful moments, and I always try to pick something from my childhood because that's where it's all rooted from. The sun is always shining on my face. And I'm like, that makes sense because I'm a fire sign. And like for Corbin, his whole life, everything that he, anytime like he doesn't feel good, even if he's sick, if he's angry, if he's sad, if he's whatever, if he takes a bath or a shower or plays in the water, he's immediately better.
Yeah. I love that. That's,
it's like learning how to like energetically like discharge and just feel better.
That's so cool, because I never really thought about it that way. I'm an earth sign and I love to be outside camping at the beach. Yeah.
I have a friend who's an air sign, and guess what? She's obsessed with horses. And I'm like, doesn't surprise me one bit. The wind in your hair, no shocker there, and going to the beach. So it's like you, and then like, okay, so with human design, and I won't talk too long because we're already at almost an hour on this, but like one of the biggest things that helped me with my kid with like human design is like understanding just the way that we respond is the biggest thing that has helped me with Corbin. But it can help you with like your kid's eating patterns, with your kid's sleep patterns, but also with the way that they respond and react and how they like get excited about things and all these things. So like I'm a manifesting generator, Kurt's a manifesting generator, Corbin is a generator, and Harper is a manifester. So I'm going to get to really experiment with the manifester stuff, but got the generators on lockdown because Corbin's a generator. But one of the biggest things that we have to do as a generator, manifesting generator or generator, is to respond. And so you respond from like your sacral or your gut instinct, which is just like a body feeling when somebody asks you a yes or no question. And so one of the biggest struggles that I had originally with Corbin was like snack time. I think that's every parent's struggle with toddlers, you know? And I would be like, Corbin, what do you want to eat? What do you want to eat? And he would never be able to give me an answer. And so we would like fight over this. And I finally learned that if I just ask him a yes or no question, he can give me a visceral response. So I say, do you want this? Yes or no? Do you want this? And like, so learning those little things helps you in all, it translates all across the board, not just with snacks. Like there's so much information in there, like with your kid's energy and all that stuff. So that's helped me with my parenting too.
You know what? That's funny that you say that, because Christy's a manifesting generator. And now that you're saying that, I would always ask her, what do you want to eat? And I would get, I don't know. But when I give her choices, then she can pick. So funny that it's like these little things that, because we've done so much training and learning in so many different, you know, areas and modalities, you tend to forget the little things that make your life so much easier. but I'm definitely going to start using that one again more consciously. And even for myself, because I'm the same way. I'm the exact same way. It's like, and also besides just the body sensations, it's the noises, right? The noises, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah. It's so funny. I always use the example, like, you know how there's always like that rant going around where guys like basically talk crap about their wives because they ask them where they want to eat. They say they don't know. And then they list places and they say no to every single place. That is because 67% of the population is a generator. And so literally generators get overwhelmed by open-ended questions. And so it literally explains.
It's me.
Yeah. It literally explains that entire conundrum. It's like when you ask a generator an open-ended question, they're like, I don't know, because we're waiting for the body response, which only responds to yes or no questions. And so it's a way to self-hack, and it's a way to hack your kids if that applies. I mean, honestly, you could use it with almost everybody because it's the majority of the population and it's going to work 67% of the time. you know,
it just popped into my head as you were saying that, the open-ended questions. I cannot stand shopping. Right? I can't stand it. When I go into a store, I feel completely overwhelmed and I'll walk right out even if I need something. But if I go into a store where I know that I like and I look at a couple of options, it's easy to pick. It kind of just like comes at me. And the same thing, like when I was dating, I would be asked, oh, where do you want to go? And I would think like, oh my God, I don't know. Just take me somewhere and I'll find something. It's the same thing with Netflix. Like this go, and these are like very common things all the time. Like on Netflix, if I was to ask, I've been asked this to find something to watch. I feel so pressured and like, I just can't handle it that I'll just go to what? Something I'm comfortable with, or I won't want, it's almost like I don't want to explore something new because I don't know the possibilities, or I know that there are too many possibilities. So that could go across everything, every area in life. Give me an option and I will pick. Don't ask me. Same thing with one other quick example. When me and my ex-husband, we were, you know, trying to figure out a situation or something, he would say, okay, so what do you want to talk about? Oh my God, you're the one who asked. Why are you asking me what I want to talk about? Like things like that. Mm-hmm. Be specific. I need that. Anyway, that's a perfect example in many ways.
I was going to say, I genuinely think that's why Netflix has so many, like, these are the top 10. And that helps me because I can go through and be like, yes, no, 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 no. But I will spend 30 minutes trying to find something. And then by the time I find something, I'm like, I don't even feel like watching anything because we need to go to bed in 15 minutes.
Like, and see, I'm kind of that way where I'll look at the options and then be like, nope, turn it off. Don't even want to deal with it.
Well, you know what's so funny is I get really overwhelmed by too many options. And whenever I was running my Golden Monkey t-shirt business, do you know how many options I have? And I have looked at that so many times and been like, you know what? I think that might have been part of the lack of success is that I gave too many people too many options. They can't decide. They don't click the button. You make it too hard for people to add to cart. It's like, give them three options to pick from. And they will be able to pick one. It's like overwhelming to have too many options. But then you have people who are like, do you have any other options? So I would make it available. But I guess that was only the 30%. You know?
I guess so. Yeah.
But I've thought about that before. I'm like, look at you, Lindsay. Like, you can't make a decision. It will take me probably 7 times to go to my cart and decide on stuff if there's a million options. And half the time I won't check out. But if it's only available in 3 colors, I'm like, I know which one I want. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Less options is just so much easier. Don't ask open-ended questions. Yeah. Especially to a generator. Definitely not.
Remember that was something that you told me with, that you had learned even with like some of your hypnosis stuff was like, or parenting stuff was like, you give your kid 2 options that you are okay with, and then they're going to pick one that you're happy with. So they get the freedom of feeling like they're picking, but they're still picking something that you know is okay for them.
Yes, exactly. And it empowers them as well because they chose.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like also like, at least like if I give Corbin two options, and I mean, we're really going crazy on food, but food's a big part of our life. But I give him two food options and he doesn't like it, then he'll name something he wants. You know, so I look at all these things as life hacks, but it's like such a cool way of understanding the way that you operate. And it's the same thing with like, I'll say this last thing about human design and then I'll shut my trap because I can talk forever. But one of the biggest things that helped me, and like this is also like ties into like the way the subconscious, because it tied into the way I was speaking to myself and the way that I was thinking about myself, was like whenever I found out that I was a manifesting generator, it completely turned my whole life around, because I was sitting there thinking that I was a failure because so for manifesting generators, you have to do what lights you up. And if something doesn't light you up, it will suck your soul dry. And it's very normal for human generators manifesting generators to have like a million projects, to have tons of unfinished projects, to skip steps, to do all of these things. And so here I was feeling like I was a failure because society tells you, you need to pick one thing and stick with it. And I was over here thinking, why can't I stick with something? Why am I all over the place? I can't do this and I can't do that. And like just feeling like a failure. And I finally was like, there's actually nothing wrong with me. And if I'm tired of this and it's sucking me dry, I should put it down and pick up something else. And it's helpful with our kids too. Like I always think about it with like the whole sports thing. It's like, you know, I want my kid to try a bunch of stuff and see what he likes, but I don't want him to have to be stuck with something that he doesn't like if he doesn't like it. You know yes. what I mean? So, I mean, it can mm-hmm. be applied in so many different ways.
Yeah, I just did that the other day yesterday with Christy in the grocery store finding new things. She was afraid to want to try something in case she didn't like it. And she was afraid I was going to be wasting money. And I was like, I want you to try things. And she's a manifesting generator. So, you know, she has this struggle sometimes, but I'm like, just try it. It's okay. You don't have to finish it. If you don't like it, I just want you to try it. And then you know that you don't like it. Simple.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we try to reinforce with Corbin. Like if he tries something, he doesn't, we're like, thank you for trying something new.
Yes. Yes. Like, and again, it feels like an accomplishment to them. Like it might not be a big thing, but it is.
Yeah.
It really is. Important. Especially for kids.
We're proud of you.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, so cool. Well, we could talk forever on this.
Dude, this should be a whole series.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll share more of our talks because we talk pretty much every week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there anything else that you want to share? Anything with Harper on parenting or Corbin? Anything that sticks out in that precious little head?
I could go. Okay. I'll say this and I'll be concise. I promise. So I recently had something like come up that it's cool because like you get with your kids, you get unlimited opportunities to heal shit that you were unaware that you needed.
Your volume went off.
Sorry, I was getting a call. This interesting thing about our subconscious is we're unaware that these programs are running in the background, right? So with Corbin, I was like hell bent on like, I mean, I'm Miss Health Conscious over here. Like we just installed a whole home water filtration system. Like we're getting crazy. And so, you know, I was just like really hell bent on breastfeeding and I really wanted to try it and I wanted to do my best and all this stuff. And so I breastfed Corbin for 6 months and it was literally the hardest thing I've ever done. And it was the hardest part of my postpartum because, and I know that this is like, it's always a slippery slope with breastfeeding, but like, it was hard because, you know, they always need you. No one else can feed them. They have to eat more frequently. It takes them longer to eat. I'm a hot and sweaty person. I have FOMO, just like my kid has FOMO. And I just basically had cabin fever because I just felt like I was missing out on so much. Like I was enjoying the bonding, but you know, like in the middle of the night when you're tired AF and you're like sleeping with like this thing in the chair, you're like, it would be really cool if I could just give him a bottle and go back to bed, right? So anyway, I made it to 6 months and then I finally was like, I can't do it anymore. And I realized that like it had created so much anxiety and like so much like lack and scarcity, because I was not a dairy cow. I'm not from the dairy cow family. Like I don't just produce like this overflow of milk. And so the whole time it was a struggle. I would be afraid when we went somewhere that I was going to have to breastfeed him or that there wasn't enough milk. There was never like a huge back stock. And it just created all this anxiety and all of this lack, because I just felt like there wasn't enough. Constantly wasn't enough. And like one of the biggest things for me was like, and this is what triggered it with Harper, like to bring it to my attention, but was like, if I like had a couple beers and I needed to pump and dump, there was a part of me that was like, I cannot physically fathom pumping and dumping. I cannot pump this out of my breast and then pour it down the drain. I cannot do it. Like I physically could not do it, because I was like, I'm pouring liquid gold, even though my kid can't drink it, down the drain. I couldn't do it. So I would just wait and like, just like get engorged and let it level out, because it comes down to your BAC, not like what gets fed to your breast first. So it's like after it levels out, it's fine. So I would do that. And so with Harper, and keep in mind, this almost 7 years later. Okay. So I've been like, that happened. And I feel like I've been in this like lack and scarcity. It's something that I've been working on and trying to heal for as long as I have been on this journey, like actively. And so with Harper, I was like, I'm not going to breastfeed her. I was like, I'm going to breastfeed her in the hospital. And then that's it. I told you that. Remember, I told you that beforehand. I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Well, we went to the hospital, we breastfed, she did great. We came home and I was like, I'm just going to breastfeed until I'm done. And then I'll be done. And like, I did it full on for 2 weeks. And then I just like, when I decided I wanted to have a beer or two, it just like enter all of this guilt, all of this turmoil, all of this anxiety, all of this fear. It's like, I can't feed my baby right now. Is there enough milk? Do I need a supplement with formula? Like all of this stuff. And then I realized whenever I was sitting there for 30 minutes thinking, should I pump and dump? Should I pour it down the drain? And I was like, oh my gosh. Because I was just like, I can just give her a bottle. Just give her a bottle, Lindsay. You're going to transition to formula soon anyway. And I was able to talk myself out of it quickly. But man, a light bulb went off. And I was like, holy shit, that has been the root of this lack and scarcity. One leg of it. I'm sure there's more that I don't know about. But it's cool because I'm like, here I am. Like, I'm in this similar situation. And instead of it like triggering me and sending me into this like spiral, it brought it up. I was able to observe it, integrate it, and heal it right there. And it's like, you're given these opportunities to heal things. And like, when we get in these situations, any kind of situation, it's like, you can look at it as an opportunity to heal something, or you can look at it as an opportunity to shut down and die.
Yes. Incredible. So love that story.
Cool. I was like, man, pretty awesome realization. And I hope that there's a million more. I really do.
And there will be. Yeah. There will be, because you are extremely aware.
I have learned to become a scientist. I'm an experimenter of my life.
Yes. And I love that, as am I, every single day.
It helps so much with the detachment from the outcome. It's like, I don't have to control the outcome. I can wait and see what it is and then go from there.
Yes. Yes. This was pretty amazing. Cool. This was fun. We need to do this more and share more of our conversations, because we have so many of them.
And every time we have them, we're like, we should have recorded this.
Yes. Well, here we start.
Here we go.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. You can expect a lot more from Lindsay and I, as we do speak every single week, and yet we have never actually recorded an episode to share. So expect a lot more coming from us. If you'd like specific topics spoken about, please reach out and let me know. You have my email. Thank you guys. Talk to you really soon.